This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Jets practice is over down at Bell MTS Iceplex. They practice one more time tomorrow before they head out to Edmonton and join the rest of the NHL within the Western Conference bubble and, of course, the Eastern Conference bubble in Toronto. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Boomers Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Boomers has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit BoomersComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, this would be the Fringe Festival time, and each year, Hunks, the improv troupe, plays to 5 stars at the Fringe Festival. We know there is no Fringe Festival due to COVID-19, but Hunks is at Rumors tonight. They've been there all week. There's 2 shows. Get your tickets, RumorsComedyClub.com. Rumors, of course, taking all the necessary precautions when it comes to COVID-19, social distancing, everything along those lines, but you can still laugh. You're still allowed to laugh in the midst of a global pandemic, and so you should go down to Rumors Comedy Club tonight and do it while watching Hunks. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com.
So you're listening to 3 Hunks right now on the radio.
Basically.
And then you're going to go listen to some more Hunks later.
That's right. You're going to go.
It's a lot of hunk.
There's
a lot of hunk of burning love.
Oh boy, you're just full of the lines today, aren't you, there, Elvis?
I've been saving up for a week.
Yeah, you've been self isolating these jokes also.
As soon as we ended last week's show, I just sat by my computer and I was like, okay, what would be a good line for next week? Okay, hunks.
There you go.
The word hunk, a little spreadsheet going.
Yeah, I actually did it while sitting by the pond.
The pond. You guys went and took a visit to the pond. How was it?
It was very relaxing.
Is it looking good today, right?
During the commercial break, I watched a bunny eat some of Dave's garden in the backyard.
That can't be good for the grass. Are you going to have to deal with that?
No, it's fine.
It's fine? Okay. Anyways, we are, of course, live at Dave Minuk's house, and Dave has a nice little water feature out there, so that's what we're talking about. Trying to get a hold of Anthony LaPanta to touch base with about the Minnesota Wild ahead of their series with the Vancouver Canucks. And that's an interesting playoff series because The ties between the two organizations, we remember they faced each other with the Western Conference Final. How many years ago was that now? It was a long time ago, but they faced each other in the playoffs for a couple years in a row.
It was like a decade ago.
It was a long time ago. And the Wild just hired the Canucks amateur scout. Their director of amateur scouting left Vancouver. It seems like not on great terms.
It was an interesting divorce.
Yeah, it was an interesting divorce. And we'll talk about another interesting divorce, which appears to be happening in Arizona with their general manager next segment. But he gets hired almost immediately by the Minnesota Wild, leaving the Canucks, joining the Wild. And now these two teams are going to do battle come playoff time starting next week in Edmonton. So another layer to the puzzle as it pertains to the Wild and the Canucks, Dave.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a series that it's similar to the Calgary and the Jets series that a lot of people don't know exactly. It's kind of a coin flip right now as to what you're expecting and how that one can go. And I think for quite a number of these play-in series that's what we're thinking. So it'll be just another interesting hockey segment to watch.
I think we have Anthony, so let's head to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Anthony LaPanta, Minnesota Wild play-by-play broadcaster. Good morning, and thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Sorry about the delay.
Oh, all good. No worries. Anthony obviously brought you on to talk about the series that's upcoming between the Canucks and the Wild. You know, a number of different layers to the series, but, I mean, you have to mention, of course, the Minnesota Wild new director of amateur scouting was just in that same job with the Canucks, you know, a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, before the pause and everything. These two teams are familiar with each other, but it really does seem like it's a bit of a coin flip series as they head to Edmonton this weekend.
Yeah, no question about that. I think it sounds like one of the more even series in the qualifying rounds, to say the least. And I think there's a lot of different similarities to the clubs. I think there's some differences, but boy, I think it's a really intriguing matchup because you got a Vancouver team that might have a top line that is a little more explosive than anything the Wild throw on the ice. Wild might have an edge in depth. I think the Wild might have an edge on the blue line, and the way the regular season went, it's hard to argue with Vancouver's goaltending. So I really think it's a series that could go either way.
I agree with you, Anthony, and I think you'd probably agree as well that, you know, the Wild are going to need all forward lines, you know, firing on all cylinders. And I wanted to ask you specifically about Matt Zuccarello, because obviously the Wild have no shortage, you know, of players with, you know, playoff experience when you're talking about, you know, guys like Eric Staal or Zach Parise or Ryan Suter. But a guy like Zuccarello, is he one of those key players for you? Because he's got so much playoff experience, you know, just went on a run, you know, to the West Final last year with the Dallas Stars. And, you know, he's had all of those playoff, you know, memories and experiences with the New York Rangers, you know, going on that long run to the Stanley Cup Final. Is he, you know, one of those players that, you know, Dean Evason and the Wild are going to be counting on to chip in quite a bit of offense?
Well, I think the way, when things were going well for the Wild at the finish last season, before the pause, I should say, or not last season, but when Dean Evason took over, one of the big things was that they started to get production from all of their lines and started to see. Identity is an interesting word, because I think a lot of times you get guys and when you start to hear identity, you think of, okay, a third line that's now focused on a checking role, or a fourth line that's focused on a defensive role only. And Dean Evason said, I want four lines that all play the game the same way. And if they're on the ice against an explosive line from the opposition, be prepared to defend. If you get scoring chances, be prepared to score. And with that, he rearranged a couple of the lines, and Minnesota started getting more production from a third and fourth line than they had all year. And Matt Zuccarello was certainly a part of that. And, you know, so it's hard to even sometimes label their second, third, fourth lines, because some nights any one of the three might see more ice time. And the way it's been going early, we've seen a lot of Zuccarello with Galchenyuk and Marcus Foligno, who had a great season for Minnesota so far. And I'm talking about since the restart camp. I think if Matt Zuccarello is a factor, that means things are going well for the Minnesota Wild.
You know, Anthony, here in Winnipeg, Paul Maurice has talked about the, you know, the lone exhibition game and how his team's approach is going to be a lot different than out of a normal training camp. How is Dean Evason handling, you know, or looking forward to this exhibition game that they're going to play on Wednesday against the Colorado Avalanche?
I think it's a really important dry run for the Minnesota Wild. I think it's for a couple reasons. Is, you know, nobody really knows for sure how teams are going to come out of this pause, because nobody's ever done this before. So you don't really know, is this, I've talked about it a lot with different people. Is it going to favor the veteran guys who now have a chance to rest and rejuvenate? Is it going to favor the young guys because their legs bounce back quicker? And I think in this case, in a one exhibition game, you've got to use that to try to figure it out. And you got to figure out, are the line combinations that you've been toying with during inner squads and everything, are they really the line combinations you want to use moving forward? And for Minnesota, they didn't really have any major injury issues going in other than defenseman Carson Soucy. But what they have to figure out is Alex Stalock going to be able to pick up where he left off as he had become the team's number one goaltender down the stretch? Or is Devin Dubnyk regained the form that we've seen him show over the last few seasons of his career, when he's been the go-to guy, the every night guy for Minnesota sometimes? I think there are questions like that that need to be answered, and you only get one tune-up to try to figure out those answers. So I think the game probably, not that the outcome necessarily matters, but the way the game is played probably matters a lot more to the Minnesota Wild than it does to the Avalanche, who are just playing for seeding position when they resume their real games instead of playing for their lives like the Wild are.
Anthony LaPanta is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290 here in Winnipeg. Anthony, of course, is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Wild. They're going to meet the Canucks in the Return to Play series. And Anthony, you mentioned Alex Stalock, and it's sort of rare that a guy who has a grand total of four playoff games under his belt is the more experienced of the starting goaltenders. But, you know, how big of a test is this for Stalock? He hasn't played in a playoff game since 2017-18, when he played one game for the Wild. You know, how much pressure is there on him? And at the same time, how reassuring is it to have a veteran like Dubnyk sort of behind him in case he does stumble a little bit?
Well, I'm sure that's reassuring to the organization and the coaching staff. I'm not sure how reassuring it is to Stalock. He's always wanted to be a number one guy, and that was part of the attraction when he decided to sign with the Minnesota Wild, was that he hadn't had a chance to be a number one guy in the NHL. He had been a number one guy in the AHL, but not really on an every night basis. So he went down to Iowa, spent a year as their number one guy, and played every night, knowing that he was likely eventually going to come to the NHL as Devan Dubnyk's backup goaltender. But throughout the last year and a half, he's always been a guy that provided energy, which is strange to say for a goaltender, but he does. The team seems to play well in front of him. They like him. He's a great teammate. And this is uncharted territory. Now, you're the go-to guy in a Stanley Cup playoff series. How are you going to handle it? I don't think he's a guy that – he seems like a guy that really doesn't feel any pressure. He's such a high-energy, positive attitude kind of guy that just doesn't seem to get fazed by anything. We'll see if that carries true. I mean, I think the early part of the series and the early part of game one, probably critical to just get Stalock confident. And, you know, if you have a slow start, it all of a sudden can start to creep into even the most sound of mind player, where all of a sudden the first shot beats you or something, and it's, oh, well, here we go. It'll seem like our playoffs are different. So I don't expect that it'll be a major difference for Al, but you just never know until you've been in it.
So, Anthony, you mentioned the Minnesota Wild's identity earlier, and I think that's really interesting. And I wanted to ask you about how much the Wild might play up that underdog role, because remember at the beginning of the season, everyone was picking the Wild to, you know, be the seventh place team in the Central Division. Obviously, you know, the Central Division, arguably, you know, the best division in the NHL. And, you know, they finished 5 points ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks, and they only finished 3 points behind the Jets, and they had 2 games in hand on the Jets. I had to go back and look that up. But is that something that, you know, this team is really, you know, saying to themselves right now with, you know, the coaching change? Dean Evason is telling them that, you know, guys, we have an opportunity, you know, to be one of the 24 teams, to be one of the teams, you know, that has a chance to, you know, get into the round of 16. And, you know, the Canucks are also a team that I didn't think have very high expectations going into the season. But is that something that, especially some of the veteran players on the Wild, like Ryan Suter and Staal and Spurgeon, you know, that's the message they're going to say, you know, to some of the younger players, that, you know, we have just as good a chance to beat the Canucks as they do to beat us?
Well, that's certainly the message that Bill Guerin has been sending. And every time I've chatted with him during this pause has been, look, we are just thrilled that the plan that was put in place includes us, and we're in it to win it. We're heading to Vancouver fully expecting to go up there and win the qualifying series, or go to Edmonton rather, but to go up against Vancouver and win the qualifying series and advance to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And he said, anybody who doesn't feel that way, they're not in the right locker room right now. So I think that's for sure how the Wild are approaching this, how their staff is approaching it, is that right now all bets are off. And if there was ever a year where it's hard to even really label it as underdogs, because nobody knows for certain how anybody's going to handle this situation. So this isn't like a normal season where you go in, let's even say, as a second wild card going up against the number one seed in the first round, because the number one seed's been sitting on the sidelines for 4 months too. So we don't really know how anybody's going to bounce back. And because of that, I think this is a season where literally anything is possible when you're in the playoffs, and both the Wild and the Canucks are among those teams. And so I'd be talking about it, and I'm sure they are, that why not us? Why not now? There's no reason that you wouldn't go into these series thinking we've got just as good a shot as any one of the other 23 teams that are still playing hockey.
Expect the unexpected. That could be the motto of the 2020 playoffs. Anthony LaPanta is the Minnesota Wild play-by-play broadcaster. Anthony, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys.
Appreciate it, Anthony. Thanks so much. When we come back, we talk about a team that appears to be in a little bit of front office disarray. Is John Chyka still the general manager of the Arizona Coyotes? It's a good question. I don't know. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
The one takeaway I believe that I have
to the Coyotes fans, a very good question. I believe that I have to earn their trust and loyalty. That's on me. If I do that, I know they'll respond. And they'll respond by coming out and watching the games and supporting us. Because at the end of the day, we're Coyote Nation, and we all want to win. And I sure as want to win.
That is Arizona Coyotes owner Alex Morello. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. I apologize.
Is it related to Tom Morello, guitarist of Rage Against the Machine?
I don't believe so. But Tom actually now plays with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band a whole bunch.
Well, he's one of the greatest guitarists ever.
Yes. So there you go. But I don't believe there's any relation. I'm pretty sure.
They went to see Bruce Springsteen in the Twin Cities.
I do remember that.
Not me. I abdicated.
Yeah, you went wandering through the Mall of America by yourself.
No, I think I had some. Didn't I have someone with me?
Your buddy who lives in
Kobe Ludwig.
Yeah, Kobe. Yeah. But in any event, yes, we did go see Springsteen in St. Paul a number of years ago.
One of the best concerts I've ever seen, and Hustler and Lawless were also there.
Oh, well, you know.
Gary was actually
with everything good,
my
there
view.
With everything good, there does come to be a gray cloud a little bit. But anyways, let's talk about the Arizona Coyotes Saturday morning. You know, any time that you can enter into a playoff series in 1 week's time and really not be 100% sure if your general manager is still your general manager, that's always a good sign.
What is going on there?
Well, news came out earlier this week that, you know, that the new owner, Alex Morello, and some of the other new executives with the Arizona Coyotes had dinner with Taylor Hall. Because Hall, of course, they acquired him from the Devils earlier this year, mm-hmm. and Hall is going to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end. And they, oopsie, neglected to invite their general manager. And then it was reported yesterday that...
And they, oopsie, made a lowball offer.
Yeah, they, oopsie, lowballed offer Taylor Hall, which is even better. But we'll get to that as well. And then, oopsie, it sounds like they're not even sure if Chayka is going to go into the bubble with the team when they head to Edmonton this weekend to get ready for the return to play series. So it sounds like John Chayka is certainly on his last legs as the general manager of the Arizona Coyotes. But the timing of everything is what's so utterly bizarre. They just signed him to a contract extension. Mm-hmm. You're a week away from starting a playoff series for the first time in forever if you're a Coyotes fan, and you have complete upheaval within your front office. So things are going very well in Arizona, as usually we can say on the show.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate because this is an organization that's been looking for stability for so many years, and whether it's ownership or team presidents or whatever area, they seem to have a lot of turnover. And Chayka seemed to be a guy who, you know, who signed some players, made some trades that people seemed to like, was kind of rebuilding that Coyotes team. You know, the AHL squad in Tucson was a pretty good squad. So he was doing some things in Arizona. Now, we obviously don't pay too close attention, but when you hear stuff like this and you're thinking to yourself, why would you leave your general manager out of a meeting with one of the top players that you're hoping to sign? And, you know,
the number one pending unrestricted
and with all due respect to owners, like, again, you're the one who's signing the paycheck. So I get why you need to know, you know, you want to have some sort of say in that. But your general manager, assistant general manager, those are the guys who understand the numbers.
Right.
You know, and generally, again, like, the focus isn't, you know, you're obviously going to always have some activist owners, guys who know the game to a certain degree. But generally, most people didn't make their money in hockey and have that knowledge base from hockey.
Right.
Most people made their money from various businesses and converted that into hockey. And now, generally, you default to the guys who have that knowledge base to be able to make those types of decisions. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not all for just leaving it to the, quote, hockey men and you staying out of it because, again, you're the owner. You're signing the checks. It's your money. So I think you absolutely have a right to be invested, no pun intended, and involved in the decision-making. But I think it looks incredibly amateur when you're allowing your GM to look like this. If you don't want him to be the GM, then fire the guy. I don't care if you signed him to a contract.
That's right.
You know, a contract just means you have to pay him. He doesn't have to be your GM. He doesn't have to be an active GM for you.
Yeah.
He can be an ex-employee who you're paying. You know, and again, we know that teams don't like to do that. But regardless, if you don't have confidence in him, but to hang him out to dry like this, to have reports, you know, saying that he wasn't even aware of the meeting, it makes it look amateur. And you know, if you're an agent who's talking to Chayka, do you feel that your conversation is even worthwhile? Because does he have the confidence from the ownership?
Think about it from Taylor Hall's perspective. You go and you sit down and you're having dinner with the new owner and the new owner's CEO, and you're talking about a contract, or apparently the contract discussion comes up. Isn't Taylor Hall's first question, "Where's John?" Where's John Jacob?
I don't. Darren Ferris is his agent. I don't even know if we know if he was there.
No, apparently Ferris may not have been at the
dinner. Why wasn't he there, right? And I agree. Like, when you look at the Coyotes roster, I mean, with the exception of, you know, Carl Soderberg, I believe, is a free agent, a UFA, and, you know, they've got a couple others. Brad Richardson, I know, is another one. But Taylor Hall's the only big one, right? Like, Nick Schmaltz was locked up to a long-term contract. You know, Kessel signed for another couple years. You know, Clayton Keller, they signed to that big contract, right? And we talked about that. You know, some people thought he might have been overpaid a little bit, but they're obviously paying for future production, right? He's only, you know, what is he, 22 years old, 21 years old. But, you know, Taylor Hall is a guy that if they were able to lock him up, you know, whether it's 5 years or 6 years or longer, I mean, that's a big signing for them. This is a Hart Trophy winner from a couple years ago, right? But, yeah, it's so unprofessional, Dave, and, you know, it's really unfortunate because I think Chyka's actually done a nice job of rebuilding this team.
Now, the elephant in the room, of course, is that the NHL is expected to punish the Arizona Coyotes for holding improper workouts with draft-eligible prospects. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, certainly something that has been sort of bubbling under the radar, that, sure, that Chyka was involved in something inappropriate as it pertains, right, to workouts. So he may have been on the verge of getting punished by the NHL anyways. That will play itself out. That announcement will come out whenever that announcement comes out. But you are 7 days away from this. Why now? I mean, if you didn't want John Chyka to be your general manager, you know, then you could have dismissed him months ago. You've had nothing but a pause.
Also, why are they negotiating with Taylor Hall when you're, you know, a week and a half away from your play-in series? Well, you know, against the Nashville Predators, like, you, all of your focus,
right,
should be on, you know, getting to Edmonton, you know, getting ready for the play-in series. Like, to me, this isn't the time, you know, to start, you know, negotiating with Taylor Hall and apparently lowballing him.
Well, and what I read, and I could be wrong, I'm not 100%, but I could have sworn Hall had said he wasn't planning on having any negotiations anyways,
right,
until after the season was, right, over, number one.
Which is so normal.
Which is, yeah, of course, most players are going to say that. And again,
especially a week before the playoffs.
Well, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, like, but it just speaks to the amateurness of the move to try and do this, to detract from the attention that, you know, your team has done. You know, you're in the playoffs, you're going to have an opportunity, or you're not in the playoffs, play-in series, you're going to have an opportunity. That should be the focus. That should be the only thing people are talking about with respect to the Arizona Coyotes. And instead, we're talking about this situation. And to me, you know, it's a big problem for Arizona, because it's such a bad look. Now, of course, you know, these are reports. We don't know it's 100%, but, you know, it seems to be where there's a little bit of smoke, there's some fire.
That's right.
And my guess is, again, it's just such a bad look for the organization when you seem to be turning things around from a stability perspective.
You have stable ownership, which was always the big question. There was never any issue about stable front office management.
Right.
Are you saying that Matthew Hulsizer wasn't stable?
As an owner, there may be left a little to be desired. But in any event, things aren't going well from, I guess it's from the hockey side in Arizona, as, mm-hmm, opposed to the business side. So,
right,
maybe that's you know, an improvement.
A welcome change,
but
yeah.
It'll be something to keep an eye on. Does Chyka even go to Edmonton? There's talk that he's already cleared out his office in Arizona, and you know, Elliot Friedman said that in a published report yesterday. So.
And then apparently Steve Sullivan would be, you know, the obvious choice to replace, yes, Chyka, right? So,
in any event, something to keep an eye on, what's going on in Arizona, but not copacetic in Arizona, no, entering the return to play. When we come back, we're going to be joined by former NHL player and current owner now of 44 Vision Hockey, a guy named Robbie Schremp, you know, friend of ours here on Illegal Curve. He's going to join us, talk about what he's been up to and about his new company and things of that nature. It's hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Saturday morning. Next Saturday, of course, the Jets and the Calgary Flames return to play series gets underway. And Wednesday night, the exhibition game against the Vancouver Canucks. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can check us out via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program former NHLer, current owner and founder of 44 Vision Hockey, Robbie Schremp, joins us on the line. Rob, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Rob. Thanks for making time for us this morning. I find it fascinating, you know, from a former player's perspective, what these guys are going to go through. You know, having taken all this time off and then coming back and stepping right into the playoffs. You know, I know you've probably never experienced anything like this, but, you know, just how, you know, bizarre of a situation and odd for a player must it be to have to sort of pause when it did and then get back started, you know, and stepping right into a playoff scenario rather than sort of building up through a regular season or things of that nature.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's a serious shock. I think probably a lot of players wouldn't have believed that the season would be resuming. And having that mindset and kind of, you think maybe 2-3 months back, it was no way they were going to be, you kind of thought that way, no way there'd be a season. So I think a lot of guys probably shut off a little bit and were expecting the season to be canceled or whatever. That would be my mindset. You couldn't imagine that there'd be playoff games. So getting refocused, narrow focus, and realizing that it's not only going to be hockey again, but it's going to be for the Stanley Cup Finals. It's going to be, a challenge, I think, for guys to get ready, get going.
Rob, we wanted to talk to you about your playing career and, you know, playing for the Thrashers and playing over in Europe, but we also wanted to talk to you about 44 Vision Hockey because there's a lot of exciting things happening, and, you know, I've seen some of the players that have gotten involved with you, you know, including Freddie Meyer, and I know Eddie Lack has gotten involved with 44 Vision Hockey. Can you just tell our listeners about how kind of this all came together? And, you know, with everything that's been happening, you know, since March with the COVID-19 virus, obviously it's been, you know, horrible what's been happening around the world. But in a way, has this kind of, you know, worked in your favor in terms of, you know, some of the online coaching that you've been able to do with, you know, players around North America?
Yeah, so I started doing some coaching with some professional guys in Europe and using the InStat platform to do video analysis and just kind of give my opinion on what they could have done differently or better or give showing them kind of the view from the vantage point that I saw it in. And from there, I decided I wanted, you know, to kind of build a team out. And I thought of, first I went to the women coaches like Randy Johnson, Amanda Pauke, Brianna Decker, girls like this, the NWHL girls, and wanted to open the lane, have them circulate their vision of the game and knowledge and experience back into the youth, into the game. So we started there, and then I started reaching out, you know, Freddie, Danny Savret, Eddie Lack, Glenn Metropolitan, got these guys that were just kind of involved in the game already, and I wanted to make this resource available on a global platform and help, you know, with the growth of hockey using, you know, great experience and knowledge and using that as our crutch, so to speak. So we got to there and we built up a platform, and now we're working on not only with players on an individual basis, we go through their video and kind of just see through our through our site and see through our knowledge and, you know, kind of explain that to them in these scenarios. It's a cool platform. I'm excited to have guys like Eddie, guys like Freddie Meyer, was my roommate in not only Long Island but also in Modo my first year in Sweden. So it's great to connect in this avenue.
Is that something?
So speaking, we're also, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to. I thought you were stopped.
Yeah, sorry. No, we're also helping. We want to support the game all around. So what we're doing is we're supporting coaching as well. So we're helping coaches with systems and structural, structure for players. So the younger levels, like the 12U, 11U level, we start with the basics and helping coaches understand the why systems and that kind of thing. So really trying to have an impact on hockey in a large scale.
And Rob, I know Dave had a question here for you, but we should also give a shout out to Venla Hovi. Obviously, connection with
Venla Hovi
here.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have 32 coaches, but Venla's there. Yeah,
no, absolutely. And, you know, played
He's
for
awesome.
the University of Manitoba Bisons and played for the Finnish Olympian team. And I know that she was recently hired by a hockey academy in BC. So we should give Venla a shout out too.
Absolutely, Venla's been great. She's great for the platform. She has great experience, great knowledge, and she has passion and really passionate about, you know, coaching and. She runs a camp over in Finland. She just did this year, I believe, their first one. So definitely really happy and proud to be having her on the platform.
Yeah, you know, Rob, my question and a follow-up to Ezzy's was simply just, do players approach you or do you approach players in terms of you know, giving them this knowledge?
A little bit of both. We're obviously putting the platform out there and letting people know it's there. Have some handful of professional guys already working with, so word of mouth would help as well. But, you know, for the youth, we're marketing that and going to showcases and tournaments. Youth tournaments, when they get back on, we'll be there on site to kind of show what the platform is and how we can help with, you know, players on that individual level.
Rob Schremp is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rob is a former NHL player. He's now the owner of 44 Vision Hockey. Rob, how has video scouting and video training changed, I think, from your playing days? You retired back in 2017-18 after playing in Austria. How has it changed from, you know, earlier, you know, this decade to what you guys are offering nowadays?
I think, well, I just took a look back at my career and what I thought it felt like I was missing, and it was more that individual work. Through video, you know, a lot of stuff when you're, you know, junior pro, it's you come in with the team, you come with the coaches, and it's more oriented, team oriented, kind of system oriented. I think what's important is each individual having, you know, the knowledge and the details on how to execute when it's their time, whether it's, you know, a lot of your first second liners have that kind of, you know, when to attack mode, or when they get the puck on a forecheck, how to attack the net. And I think what we try to do is implement that through the whole team and make sure even third, fourth line guy, like, you know, sometimes the rope's a little bit longer for a first scout line guy than a fourth line guy, but the fourth line guy might get two or three chances, and we want to make sure they're ready to execute when they get their individual chance off the system. You know what I mean? So I felt like this was more, this was something that was missing when I played, and I wanted to, you know, help us, you know, put it into the game and give it as a, what I want to say, as almost as a, tool for the players or a resource for the players that, you know, felt that they could use that little bit of help individually.
Rob, Dave M's got a question for you about the Atlanta Thrashers here, but I actually wanted to go a little far back into the past, 2007. I don't know if you remember, you used to do a blog for IllegalCurve.com, and we had some Q&As going up back in 2000. Do you remember that at all in 2007? That was your first year of pro hockey when you were playing for Springfield.
Yeah, you know, that's so long. That's crazy. That's awesome. Been around that
so
long.
It was a
that's
big
hilarious.
Yeah, well, I was going to say so we obviously have our website illegalcurve.com. Back in those days, 2007, we were a blogspot page, and mm-hmm. that was a big deal, and you really helped us out, and obviously you didn't have to do that, but you know, you were only a couple of years removed from your 145 point season with the London Knights. And you know, I went back, and I think you did 9 or 10 entries, and we started doing Q&A formats, and I went back and I looked, and it was shortly after you had picked up your first career NHL point, and Richie Pollock asked you about it, and your response was, "It was pretty sweet to see the puck cross the line. I thought Marty Turco made the save for sure." So it was pretty funny to go back and look at that. But yeah, I just thought I would bring that up and ask you if you remember doing those posts for us, because you know, we really appreciated back then, because you know, we really didn't know what we were doing, and you know, 13 years later, we really still don't know what we're doing. So.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I try to be available, and I'm glad that helped out, and try to be, you know, as human as possible and as available as possible. And I felt like that through the course of my career, whether it was with fans or with, you know, with stuff like what you guys are up to, if, you know, if I could help out in any way possible, it's something, no problem for me. And try to make it pass as much as I could.
Well, is that something that's missing in the NHL, Rob, the personality? We see so much of it, you know, whether it be on social media or whether we see it in different avenues from so many other leagues, and the knock against the NHL is that some of the players just don't show enough of their personality. Do you think that's something that, you know, players are maybe beginning to get behind a little bit more, is maybe showing a little bit more of themselves, and maybe, at, you know, getting a little bit more publicity that way for being, you know, the entertaining humans that a lot of them are?
I think it's starting to come, you know, I think it's starting to come through a little bit. And I think what's becoming obvious, or maybe a little bit more clear, is that, you know, there's really an opportunity with a team. There's 20 opportunities. When you start talking about branding and marketing, and if you start talking about value of the team, there's 20 opportunities, because each player can be a brand, and that goes back to the team. So kind of opening up a little bit and showing a little bit more inside of, you know, the human side of it, I think it's been very helpful for the league, and I think it's helpful for the players too, to kind of separate a little bit from the game, have their own kind of lane, but it circles back towards the team. I think that's, you know, where the opportunity lies, and just kind of show where the player came from, and you know, what it took to get there, so to speak. So it's you call it a brand, but it's really kind of each guy's life story. So when you start using it in that sense, that's 20 opportunities instead of just, you know, one team logo. You know, it's a finicky line, though, just being careful of, you know, what you're putting out there and what kind of image you're portraying. So some guys are very private, and some guys like to have a little bit more open and show themselves. So it's really kind of each your own sort of thing. In my opinion, I think I just kind of expressed how I felt about it. I think it's an opportunity for 20, you know, different perspectives, so to speak, that lead back to that team logo. And I think that's beneficial when you start talking about in the business sense of marketing and exposure, so to speak.
You know, Rob, your last season in the NHL was 2010-11 with the Atlanta Thrashers. You played 18 games with them. And obviously, they moved to Winnipeg. What was it like playing for Atlanta in that final season? Like, was there a lot of buzz with the players in terms of that? You know, because obviously it had been going on for a while. There's a lot of speculation. So what was it like being in the dressing room with Atlanta, you know, with that buzz about potentially moving?
Honestly, there was no buzz. They didn't even know it was happening. I found out about it about a month after the season. I got a text, and it was a group text from Andrew Ladd saying that the team was relocating to Winnipeg. And I was like, whoa. That was actually there was no buzz around the room about it. There was no talk about it. I had no idea that was even happening. Clearly, I was not in the loop. If it was happening, the buzz was going around the room. So that's how I found out. It was literally something like, pack your warm stuff. The team's moving to Winnipeg. it was definitely, for me, I was like, oh, I can't, yeah, kind of a shocker. But to that point, I mean, it was, you know, looking around the building and stuff, it was never really full. So it wasn't a shock in that aspect of why they were moving. Just the way it happened was kind of, to me personally, a shock.
Now, Rob, I was fortunate. I caught the episode of Spitting Chicklets that you did recently with Biz Nasty and Ryan Whitney and the boys. And obviously, you're, you know, former league mates, I guess. You played in the OHL, I should say. League mates isn't really a term. I don't know what I was talking about. But you played in the OHL at the same time as Biz Nasty. And you were talking about, you know, playing in Atlanta, obviously. And you mentioned, you know, the DAC 5 with Tim Stapleton and Anthony Stewart, and I wasn't sure who the other two members were, but maybe you're able to tell us who the other two members of the DAC 5 was and what that was all about. But it seems like even though the Thrashers back then maybe, you know, weren't a playoff team, it seems like it was still a pretty tight-knit group.
Yeah, you know, Bogosian was there. Remember, Bogey was at that power play shift with us. The group was a great. That was the thing that was shocking too, is the fact that they were moving and not. I wasn't going to wind up being a part of it. Was that the team was tight knit group and had a lot of great guys. Mark Stewart, that comes to mind. Blake Wheeler, that group of guys was a really not only good guys per se, but also like really good hockey players. Watching Buff on a nightly basis was awesome. Toby Enstrom, the small details, the things that he could do on the ice with his skating and his stick work. For being, I guess, you know, you could kind of call an undersized defenseman. He played a lot bigger than what he was. Took up a lot of space and a lot of guys' room with his stick work. And, it was a really good team, to be honest with you. I was excited. I was wishing to stick around there a little bit longer. But it was a really good group of guys and enjoyed my time with them for sure.
Rob, last question for you. You talk about how that Thrashers team was a real good group of guys and, you know, a good vibe, in the dressing room. As a player, as a hockey player, be it in junior, be it professional, what's it like being in a dressing room that doesn't have that good vibe? When there's a group of guys who clash, or maybe they clash with management, or there's a divide in the room, how difficult is that? And what's it like being a part of that if you were ever a part of a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, chemistry is a huge thing, and it goes, you know, towards the product on the ice and how you pull together on the ice, and when it's not jiving. You know, sometimes it can happen where it doesn't jive, but whenever you get on the ice, everybody puts their hat on and goes to work. There's other times it's been where literally won't put the hat on and go to work just because they're not jiving. it's a horrible atmosphere because it's tricky to fix it, you know. It takes a lot to fix it, and people that have the right answers and who has the right answers, you never know in those situations because it just seems like nobody's right. Tough to be part of, have been part of that, unfortunately, but... it's, you just want to win and you want to be part of something special. And when it's not going that way, it's really, it's hard. It's frustrating. And, morale is low. I'll say that. It's not good.
That's very diplomatic of you. Rob Schrepp is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rob played professional hockey for, well, too many years for me to be able to count, both in the NHL, AHL, and then overseas, and he's now the owner and founder of 44 Vision Hockey. Rob, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the program.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too, Rob. Take
care.
Rob. When we come back, we talk about the NHL award finalists. We give our winners. Those were all announced in the last week or so before we head into the start of the play-in series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Thank you. Here are the finalists for the Hart Memorial Trophy, recognizing the player who is most valuable to his team. Take a look.
That was Alex Trebek last year at the NHL Awards, handing out the Hart Memorial Trophy, which ended up, of course, going to Nikita Kucherov. The finalists for the Hart Trophy and all the other NHL awards were announced over the last 2 weeks or so. The finalists for the Hart and the Ted Lindsay Award, which the NHLPA hands out, are the same. Nathan MacKinnon, Leon Draisaitl, and Artemi Panarin of the New York Rangers.
So, Breadman.
Yes, the bread man. Exactly right there, Mr. Ginsburg. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Of course, the Jets and the Vancouver Canucks, an exhibition game on Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m., and then it gets for real next Saturday, 9:30 p.m., the Jets and the Calgary Flames, game one of their best of five return to play series. All Winnipeg Jets playoff games available here on TSN Radio 1290.
Pretty awesome that we're going to have hockey on the ice, like a game on the ice, in 5 days.
It's exciting. It's been a long time. It's been a long pause. I haven't watched live sports in a long, long, long time, so I am looking forward to it.
You haven't been watching German Bundesliga soccer?
I haven't been. You know, I've missed out on it. I've been trying to PVR them, but I just haven't been able to.
Well, and you got baseball back. The Jays picked up a big win yesterday.
The Jays did pick up a big win yesterday, yeah. No, I didn't catch the Jays.
Sorry, the
either.
Buffalo Blue Jays.
Yeah, I'm not even sure where what their first name is supposed to be anymore, but I guess Buffalo would be the best case scenario at this point. But no, hockey on its way back, and we're all very excited about that. And, of course, this being your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290. You can just keep it locked and loaded on this fine radio station. So let me ask you, the Hart Trophy and the Ted Lindsay Award winner. Do you think they're going to go to two different winners, by the way?
Yeah, it's an interesting
same
question,
nominees.
Right? Yeah.
One's voted by the NHLPA, one's voted by the PHWA, Professional Hockey Writers Association. Who do you think wins each of the two trophies?
Yeah, Leon Draisaitl is coming off of just an incredible year.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why he's obviously a nominee. But I think Artemi Panarin is probably going to get more votes than some people think. And there was that debate that, you know, if the Rangers didn't get, you know, in the play-in series, if they didn't qualify, I should say, for the play-in series, that maybe Panarin, you know, wasn't going to ultimately be one of the finalists, because it rarely goes to, you know, a player who is on a non-playoff team, right?
Right, that seems to be sort of the line of demarcation. Right. You have to be a playoff team to be eligible.
Right, and so every year it seems like we're having these debates, right? But, you know, when you talk about... I'm glad that Dave M. is back from his bathroom break, by the way. Thanks for joining us here, Dave. But I guess it's your house, so you can use the bathroom whenever you want. But, yeah, I mean, I think Draisaitl is most likely going to win both awards, but Nathan MacKinnon, to me, is the one guy who has just... He's just quietly there. Like, all of the buzz is around Draisaitl and, you know, Panarin for being one of those finalists because, you know, he just had such an incredible, especially second half of the season. But I think it is Draisaitl's trophy to lose, but I think it is going to be closer than maybe some people think. Like, last year, for example, it was Kucherov in a landslide.
Yeah. But why shouldn't it be MacKinnon?
That was my preseason pick.
Draisaitl, okay. I mean, and that was a good pick. Draisaitl had 110 points, and then Connor McDavid, his line mate and his teammate, was second with 97 points.
But he missed some games, so that's what hurt him.
That's fine. Panarin had 95 points, but Mika Zibanejad wasn't too far behind him. Zibanejad, I believe, had 75 points.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon had 93 points for the Colorado Avalanche.
Yep.
Do you know who was second on the Avalanche in points? It was Cale Makar with 50. A 43-point gap.
if he doesn't win the Calder, he'll finish second.
No, McCarr's had a great year. But it seems to me that MacKinnon is almost been described as the odd man out among the Hart Trophy and the Ted Lindsay nominees. But to me, given the gap and the lack of, teammate support for a lot of the season.
Well, they had injuries.
Rantanen
30 games.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. So where are the Colorado Avalanche if Nathan MacKinnon isn't as prolific as he was this season?
And that's why he'll probably finish second, Drew, right? And that's,
why shouldn't he win?
Well, no, he could obviously win it all, and I think that's why I said it'll be closer than I think some people think, but that's why I said that I think more people should be talking about MacKinnon's year, right? Like, I think because Dreisaitl, with the goal scoring and just how dominant he was all year long, right? Like, if you look at, Dreisaitl's year, it's not like he had, all of his points in 1 or 2 months. He was, like, consistent, like, 2 points, 1 point, two, like, he was so good all year long. And I think it's also because Dreisaitl lives in the shadow of Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's even more impressive. When you're in Edmonton and more people are talking about Dreisaitl than Connor McDavid, who is, I think we all agree, the best player, at least the best offensive player in the league. I think you could make the argument Crosby is still the best all-around player. But McDavid is certainly, the best player, So I think that's maybe why. But yeah, you can make that argument, Drew, especially with some of the injuries the Avalanche had, notably Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah, Gabriel Landeskog. Right.
I think
as well.
Especially because of the injuries, you could make the argument.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I think it's a completely valid point by you, Drew. I think the fact is that, when you have tandems, especially when they, often play together and they produce together and that sort of thing, versus if you're the guy and Landeskog is out and Rantanen is out, and what does that mean? That means every single team is keying on you. You're going up against the best checking line from that team. You're going up against the best defenders of that team that you're facing. Yep. And it's on you to produce. And to Ezzie's point, MacKinnon's just a consistent producer. So to me, I think MacKinnon is entitled to win it. Absolutely. 100%.
Well, to your point, exactly. The game plan is stop Nathan MacKinnon.
Right.
And the teams couldn't stop him. And even though he, not that he was alone, but that he was, Cale Makar is a rookie. So how much can you really, he was great, but how much can you really rely on a rookie? If Cale Makar had 40 points, it would have been a successful rookie year.
Makar's a stud. Like, are we going to be surprised if he's a Norris finalist one day?
No, not at all. Of course we won't be.
Or but winner?
Nathan MacKinnon, to me, that 43 point gap, if he's just okay this year, maybe he's a point a game as opposed to almost a point and a half per game. If he's a point a game player, where's Colorado in terms of the standings? They're probably in the return to play series. They're not necessarily one of the top four teams in the Western Conference. So Nathan MacKinnon, to me, is maybe not getting the love that he needs and he deserves to get as it pertains to the Hart Trophy voting and the Ted Lindsay Award voting. It'll be very interesting to see how the numbers break down front.
If I had to put money on it, I would say that Dreisaitl wins, but he wins. It's pretty close.
Fair enough. We will see. Find out when the playoffs resume. The NHL will be making those announcements throughout the course of the playoffs. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Predators-Coyotes series. Hal Gill, Nashville Predators analyst, is going to join us on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. 1 week from tonight, game one between the Jets and the Flames, and of course Wednesday night, the lone exhibition game, the Jets and the Canucks, all Winnipeg Jets playoff games available here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To discuss the Nashville Predators as they are set to do battle with the Arizona Coyotes, we're pleased to welcome to the program Predators analyst Hal Gill. Hal, good morning and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on this beautiful Saturday.
Yes, a beautiful Saturday indeed. Just, you know, stiflingly hot here in Winnipeg, so just as you would expect, getting ready to start some nice playoff hockey. But, you know, Hal, obviously we brought you on to talk about the team that you cover, the Predators, and the big question, of course, is that who's going to be in net for the Preds starting game one? It's sort of, you know, we're just used to it being Pekka Rinne, the all-world goaltender for the Predators for so many years in a row, but he seems as though he has been usurped by UC Saros. So if you were the head coach and game one is approaching against the Coyotes, who is in your net to start the series against the Coyotes?
I don't even know if I would make a decision yet. I really believe that they're both treating it as they're going to be the starting goaltender. When I look at, you know, the track record for Rinne is so hard to avoid. You know, you can't just turn your head and say he didn't do all the things that he did for the Preds for so many years. You can't just ignore that. But you have to look at Saros and the way he played going into the pause. He was fantastic. So John Hines has a really tough decision. But in the end, I think you really can't go wrong. And I think as a player, if I was in that locker room, I'm looking at either one of them and saying, I'll go out there and play for either one of these guys. So a good problem to have. I honestly think you're going to need to use two goalies, especially with the back-to-backs in games two and three. I just think it makes sense to be able to put one out and put another one on the next night. So a good problem to have, but a tough decision. I don't think you can go wrong, though. Either way, I think you're going to have some success with those guys.
You know, Hal, we were talking about this earlier in the show, like the first hour of the show. We were talking about that Jets-Predators series from back in 2018, which was obviously a fantastic series that the Jets were able to defeat the Predators and go to the West Final for the first time in franchise history. And, you know, you go back to, you know, that team that had 117 points, I think it was, and I think the Jets were at 114 points, if I'm not mistaken. And instead of, you know, having the Jets and Predators at the top of the Central Division, now they're in a play-in series situation. And I wanted to specifically ask you about that top line of Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, and Victor Arvidsson, because, you know, that year for me, they were arguably at times the best line in the entire league. Obviously, goaltending is going to be important, but, you know, that top line, is that to you the key for the Predators, you know, not only if they're going to beat the Coyotes, but, you know, go on a significant run here?
Yeah, if they want to go on a run, they're going to need those three guys to be humming. And, you know, they've got lightning in a bottle right there with that line. But I really think it's about the top six. The top six has underperformed all year. If you look down the line, Forsberg was really coming into his game. You know, right before the pause, he was fantastic. Johansson has been sputtering. I do think Johansson has played well defensively, but the numbers aren't there, and he needs to put up some numbers for the team to ride on. And Arvidsson, after that hit he took in St. Louis, the Bortuzzo suspension hit, he really struggled to get back. He was injured for a while after that, and I think he struggled to get back. So a healthy Arvidsson with that speed burst that is so effective is going to be huge for the Preds. If that line can get going, the Preds can be dangerous, but you can't avoid the fact that Duchesne wasn't playing Duchesne-like. He hasn't been, at the beginning of the season, he was really good. He looked good playing on that 1A, 1B first line center. And, you know, he's found some magic with Granlund, and Granlund has been working hard. He's playing, so they're on a line with Turris, it looks like. And I think that line is going to be successful, too, if they want to have a run. So, yeah, that top six is going to be big. If that Jofa line with Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson can get going, they can be dangerous.
You know, Hal, you have over 1,100 NHL regular season games under your belt, which means you probably played more than your fair share of exhibition games. Now the Preds are playing the Stars on Thursday, and I mean, this is going to be an exhibition game like no other, but how do you as a player go into a game that's really, I guess, important in terms of tuning up for the play-in series, but also not wanting to get hurt? So what is your mentality like as a hockey player?
a little different, isn't it? Going into a normal season, I don't even know what normal is anymore, but going into a normal season, you have that first game where you're like, all right, let's just dust off the rust here and try to figure things out, and you kind of tune up so when you're going into your fifth exhibition game, you're hitting the season in stride. Going into this, I don't really know. I've bounced it back and forth in my head. You want to knock the rust off and get going, but you really got to tighten the screws and get going a lot faster than you ever have in the past. So I don't want to put too much stock if I was playing that this is the most important thing. But at the same time, you really want to be up to speed. And you're not just going into a regular season game. You're going into a playoff atmosphere, and it's going to be tough. That going from exhibition where you're starting off, 0-20, and then you're going in, you got to be hitting full speed right as soon as you come. You're hitting full 60 going hard. It's going to be tough. Confidence wise, I think it's huge that you come out and perform well. But also you want to be going with speed and for me, that would have been tough. So, these guys are good. They're pros and they're all in the same boat. So, it should make for interesting hockey. You're looking at the exhibition and going, what is our team going to look like? And then wham, you better find it quick.
Hal Gill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hal is a Nashville Predators television analyst. The Predators and the Coyotes will play in a return-to-play series starting next weekend in Edmonton. You know, Hal, that second line of the Predators, Granlund and Turris and Matt Duchene, they had their peaks and valleys this year. We know that Granlund and Turris definitely were struggling before the head coaching change, and things improved for the better under John Hines. Why do you think those two players specifically were able to sort of turn around their season after Hines was hired as the new Predators head coach?
Yeah, Granlund he's been driving all season. I love the way he plays the game. You know, he drives the net, he pushes on the forecheck, he's strong in the corners. He's been doing a lot of work, he wasn't really getting rewarded for it. When Hines came around, he found a little more of reward, a little more bang for his buck in what he was doing out there. So I really liked where his game was at. Turris, I give this kid a ton of credit. He's been through a lot. He deserves a look on the power play. He deserves a look in key situations offensively, and he wasn't getting them. Under Laviolette, he was in the doghouse. He was scratched, and that's hard to go through. I've been through that, and it's not easy. He kept his chin up and his nose to the grindstone, and when Hines came in, he started killing penalties. He took on any role he could to help the team, and I think that turned his confidence around, and he started to play some pretty good hockey. I thought he was really the best guy the Preds had on the half wall on the power play right before the pause. He was looking good in that situation. So going into this, maybe he's got his confidence around. He's playing on the left wing, which is, a little different for him. He's usually a center. Duchene is in the middle, and I think, if those two guys, both skilled players, both can play with speed. If they can start to work with each other, make some exchanges off the rush, be creative and get something going, I think they can be dangerous. But that's a bigger question than the Jofa line. I think this second line is kind of thrown together. They're trying to figure out how to make it work. And if it does come around, it'll be awesome for the Preds because they need that second line to be going. But it really hasn't clicked this year. So this will be a good test for them to see what they have.
Hal, Dave mentioned earlier, you played over 1,100 games in the NHL, so a thing or two about defensemen. And, we have to ask you about Roman Josi. He's a Norris Trophy finalist this year. Obviously, he's got some stiff competition. John Carlson is a guy that, a lot of people think is the front runner to win the trophy. And, you've watched Roman Josi play, over the years. And, obviously, he's been just such a dominant defenseman. I would probably say, if he's not in the, top three, he's certainly in the top five, maybe even make the argument he's the best defenseman. But, has his season almost been a little bit underrated? You know, you talk about, you know, players like Ryan Johansson, you know, Matt Duchene, you know, their offensive numbers weren't quite there, and you have Josi leading the team in points, having a career year. Like, it, I guess, without asking you in a very cliche, obvious way, is he almost underappreciated for how good of a defenseman he is?
Yeah, I believe so. I think he should have been up for the Hart. As big as these guys that are up for that award and how they deserve that, if Josi isn't playing the way he played this season, there's no chance that we're talking about a qualifying round. I think this team relies on him so much, both defensively and offensively. Somehow, and this is the hard part for me, if I took the chances as a regular defenseman, if you take the chances that Josi takes, there's no way you get back into position to play good defense. Somehow he does that. He relies on his skating, and he's one of the best skaters in the game. And he does it all for the Preds. I think if you look at the analytics, I'm not an analytics guy, but I've had enough of a peek into all the numbers. He's the guy, in my opinion, that wins the Norris, but not looking at the numbers, I look at the eyeball test, and when you need a big play, Roman Josi is doing it for the Preds, and he's done it, and I won't say a majority. It's overwhelming. It kind of blows my mind that 80% of the games that he plays, he's the best player on the ice, and that's hard to do. Just watching him day in, day out, the way he skates, the way he carries the puck, gets the exits, gets through the neutral zone, and then his entries. I think he doubles the number for any other defenseman on entries into the zone. He really is spectacular to watch. And so I really don't think there's a contest. I know Carlson is fantastic and a lot of fun to watch, but Josi is, you know, head and shoulders above him. Honestly, I that's the way I feel. And, I think he's an exceptional player. I think you're going to see a lot more from him as the years come. He's just learning the game more and more and getting better at picking his spots. And offensively, the work he does for the Preds has been awesome. And so they're not here without him, and I think they know that. And, yeah, he is underrated, but if you watch him, you know, you watch him on a consistent basis, there's no way you can look at him as underrated. You pick him out right away, and you watch him the rest of the game.
You know, Hal, here in Winnipeg, looking at the Jets-Flames series, they've got one game. It was a Heritage Classic, so an outdoor game. Not a lot of video you can use. The Flames and the Coyotes, I think they last played in December, and I think they only played twice so far this season. So that's pretty much almost like looking at it from last season. How do you match these two teams up? How do you think Nashville looks against Arizona?
It's going to be interesting. Both there's two different games with the Preds. The Preds had a hard time because the defensive structure that Tocchet uses with the Coyotes was really effective. You know, just packing it in and then capitalizing on their chances. They wait for a little miscue and they got speed and they counter hard. So the Preds had a hard time with it, but other times, you know, if you play too slow and you play too defensive, the Preds can take advantage of that. So I think this is going to be a great series. I think all these series is going to be a balance of risk-reward, right? You want to go out and you want to play solid defense, but you can't slow play it too much. You got to go out and try to win these games. So it's going to be a balancing act for all these teams. So I really think... I'd love to give predictions, but there's really nothing to go on, right? You said it. This is a new season. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch because there are so many aspects. I look at the coaches. They have five-game series. Can they make the adjustments in five games? Like, how much do you want to adjust? How much do you want to stick to your gut and let the guys play? So I think this is going to be a fun series, interesting series to balance Coyotes' defensive structure and the Preds' offensive. I think they were a lot better defensively as under Hines, but they do have the firepower, as do the Coyotes. So You know, I think it's going to be a great series. Goaltending, you said, is going to be a good matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm not making predictions. I'm kind of just going to sit there and watch it and enjoy it.
Hal Gill is a Nashville Predators analyst. The Preds and the Coyotes will start in the Western Conference bubble next weekend. Hal, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, enjoy it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Hal. When we come back, one final segment, quick update from Jets practice, much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you here on this Saturday morning. The Jets have one more training camp practice here in Winnipeg before they ship off to Edmonton. In case you're just joining us, well, first of all, you've missed a great show, so you can get it on the podcast version. Jets head coach Paul Maurice saying Jansen Harkins, of course, quote-unquote, unfit to practice today. That's why he did not skate as part of the Jets practice and or scrimmage. Nikolaj Ehlers, Paul Maurice saying that he was happy to see Nikolaj Ehlers get a skate in with the first group after leaving Thursday's practice session early. Ehlers also didn't scrimmage, but he did briefly join the team on the ice for a skate. So that's a good sign for the Jets that Ehlers will be good to go come Wednesday night in Vancouver, pardon me, in Edmonton against the Canucks as part of the exhibition game. And the next Saturday, the Jets and the Flames, game one of the Return to Play series. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Nashville Predators analyst Hal Gill, Rob Schrempf, former NHL player, Anthony LaPanta, Minnesota Wild broadcaster, and Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's available on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you can get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show.
Shout out to Shawnee Asor back at the mothership.
Yes, doing a great job behind the board. That's our producer, Sean Asor. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I am your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.